Welcome back to Word on the Hills, with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Dan Buchanan. So, Dan, you unearthed a great deal of information about Dr. King, many documents related to his life and crime. Now, how did you deal with the challenges of combining all this material with the story of his life and turning it into an entertaining book for the general reader?
Yes, it was a challenge. This is the first book that I've written, and I've written a lot of history, but usually smaller pieces about local history. And I realized right away if I wanted the book to be successful, I would have to write something that was easy to read and would be entertaining. I was no expert at it, so I had to kind of guess about what that was. I had experience with writing history stories that were interesting to people because people have been telling me what I was writing was interesting. Things that were on my website were getting good responses. So I knew that I had to use the personal connection of the family to as a link into the story. And I knew I had to minimize the historical detail, if you will. The story is based on original documents, but you don't need to put that in people's face all the time, although the book has a lot of quotes, as you will see. But I hope always to use them in a way that flows with the story, that allows it to flow and is interesting. So I was really happy, though, that we were able to, that the publisher agreed to publish the original documents that are most interesting in an appendix at the back of the book. So while the story is one thing that people can read and be interested in, if folks aren't interested, they don't need to look at the appendix. But I have to say, many people are coming back to me about their attitude and opinions after reading the journal and the confession, especially.
Yes, well, I was going to say that's almost like having one of the characters speak and the central character at that.
I like to use the words of the people at the time. Because some of the wording is different than today, and it has a characterization of the time. The fellow who arrested Dr. King said he found him under the straw of a hog's nest. Where would you hear that?
So the story of one man's life often illuminates the way of life of a whole community. Now, was this the case in Dr. King's history? What were the issues that were most important for the people of Ontario at that time?
Yes, I didn't necessarily go into the story with this idea, but after writing it and seeing these issues in the story, I became interested that this was a place to illustrate those things. Religion and the role of religion in the community at that time was very obvious because, number one, Dr. King used it to his advantage because he was very fluent and he could write and speak beautifully. The policeman that looked after him said he prayed like a minister, and he used that to influence people.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the religious community took over to make sure that he confessed his crime. It was very well documented. Ministers and doctors, day after day after day, to convince him to change his attitude around and admit what he had done and to make peace with his maker. It was an amazing episode.
How was everybody so convinced that he'd done it? Did he admit it immediately, or...?
It was pretty clear to the general community, because they'd heard about the arsenic and she had died. They didn't really know the technical thing. There was no CSI at those days. And even in his confession, he says other things like, oh, he fed her opium at some point. He gave her chloroform at some other point. But the folks in those days really needed to know very simple things, and the fact that he'd given her arsenic and everybody knew that was poison, that was enough. Mm-hmm. And the jury concurred. There was no question. And in the confession, he basically tells us that he does it in a verbose and backhanded kind of way, but he does confess, actually, that he did it.
He was a doctor. He could have made the argument that he'd use these things to treat some illness. I mean, arsenic was a common...
The twist is that his degree was in homeopathic medicine, which arsenic is actually a treatment under some conditions. So doctors came up from Philadelphia, where he had his schooling, to protect homeopathic medicine.
Yes.
And it was argued that he was treating her with arsenic. Mm. And that it was maybe he gave her too great a dose or something. But that was pretty much discounted by the other doctors. Number one, people didn't really know Every doctor had a different opinion in those days on what arsenic would do in the human stomach and the human body was an experimental thing. So it really didn't matter to the general population. They just wanted him to hang. I mean, people were just outraged by this crime. Well, look what you have. You have a husband who murdered his wife and a doctor who murdered his patient.
Oh, I quite agree. There was every reason to to be outraged.
That's why.
But looking back now, Dan, and at the primitive way in which autopsies were conducted and the knowledge of the community, are you convinced that he deliberately set out to murder his wife?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think there's too much evidence. But he was very intelligent. He always obfuscated everything. And he could explain, that's part of what the confession is explaining everything away. He responded immediately as if, oh, the chloroform he gave her, that was too small a dose to kill her. But he'd been given her arsenic for a month, and she was so weak that, you know, her body couldn't stand it. That little nuance in those days wouldn't have been very interesting to anyone, even in the trial. And they didn't know about it, because he wrote this, you know, 3 days before he was hanged. So I'm pretty sure he did it deliberately, but there's no cut and dried with him. He was always kind of gray and down the middle and was full of words.
Well, how about reading some more for us?
Okay, this piece deals with the actual hanging. Mm. Again, this is the only hanging ever took place in Northumberland County. And the newspapers, of course, reported it liberally.
So was it in where the Coburg Jail was, in that building outside?
At the corner of Elgin and Burnham Street, where the Golden Plow Seniors Residence is today. That's where the jail and courthouse was at the time. A year and a half later, the jail and courthouse moved down to Victoria Hall.
Oh, yes.
This was done in the old courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is chapter 35. Called Launched into Eternity. The Guide, which is the Port Hope Weekly Guide newspaper, report continues. The execution. About 15 minutes before 9 o'clock, the sheriff, followed by the prisoner, who was accompanied by the venerable, the Archdeacon of York, the Reverend Mr. Vanderburg, another clerical gentleman, and his two brothers, issued from the front door of the courthouse and ascended the steps leading to the platform. Passed out upon the gallows, one of the clergymen reading as they went the burial service of the Church of England. The condemned walked with a firm step to the front of the gallows, and in a very clear and distinct voice, free from the slightest tremulousness, read the following: My fellow Christians, I stand before you today in the most awful position in which a human being can be placed. Convicted of the most dreadful of crimes, and sentenced by the laws of my country to pay the penalty of my guilt by sacrificing my life. The crowd listened intently to every word, marveling at the strong voice and confident manner of a man about to meet his Maker. He made a point to entreat my fellow Christians to take warning from my fate, and to be aware of the temptations of the evil one. He implored his audience to live in the fear and love of God, honor his Sabbath, keep close to him in prayer and the reading of his word. It was his wish to be on good terms with all living beings, to thank all those who had supported him, and to forgive those who had wronged him. Dr. King always felt that if he could just put enough fancy words out there, people would think well of him. Even in the circumstances.
I wonder whether he really felt he had been wrong. it's a fascinating situation. Anyway, thank you very, very much, Dan. That was a really interesting interview. So, where can listeners buy your book, and where will you next be talking about it?
The book is in bookstores all around, certainly in the main bookstores in Coburg and area. It is online. Actually, the best review is on Amazon.com. It's also in libraries, so I know that the libraries are backed up, so you'll be in line if you want it at the library. I'll be telling the Dr. King story at several events in the next few months. You can find the information on the Dundurn calendar for author events on the internet.
Thank you so very much, Dan, for coming in and making this interview with us.
You're very welcome.
To connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to our email, wordonthehills897@gmail.com, or connect with us at our website, www.wordonthehills.com, where all these programs are archived and available to listeners at any time and from anywhere. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week on Northumberland 89.7 at 1 o'clock on Sundays.